Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, gay.
And ladylikes. All the ladies, all the likes.
Just the ladies?
And the likes.
And the gays. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes.
We're here too. Ladies be taking it over.
We run the world. I'm sorry. As Beyonce says.
Who run the world? Ladies and gays.
Yeah, I'm into it. Together. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This week on Minority Corner.
What are you talking about?
And okay, well, first I'm actually going to go off on a wild tangent. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to you about a big wild tangent about my experience in Palm Springs. There's much to report on how gay it is, and the straight ladies are acting a fool.
Oh man, James, you know, I am so excited to hear about your MTV Spring Break Palm Springs 2016 extravaganza.
Actually, the full title is the annual Homotacular Extravaganza Vakiki Palm Springs Edition.
Oh.
Yeah, it's got a name.
I'm guessing you came up with this title?
Actually, I did not, but that's my friends. But what I'm really going to get into later on in the nuts and bolts, and I'm going to be answering a question that you didn't even know existed. So,
oh, snap.
I'm going to give you the question, and I'm going to give you the answer that you didn't know existed. Why is your camera so racist? A history of racism in film and photography.
Interesting. Well, I'm excited.
Well, I'm glad you are. I could tell because you said interesting for so long.
Yeah, I just extended those N's and G's at the end of interesting.
That's how you know someone's into it. Well, what are you talking about?
This week I am going over, is it possibly the end of federal private prisons?
Ooh, could it be? I hope so. I hope you're going to tell me yes. I hope your segment will literally then just take 5 seconds and you'll just answer it and you'll be like, yep.
And then back we're like, to you, that's James. It. Goodbye.
Well, let's find out all of these. We have so many questions, some burning questions, like a burning heat rash and a burning vagina.
We need to find
out all these answers. And if that is your case, you should probably get that checked out.
Yeah, you need an ointment.
Yeah, something to rub down there. Mm,
cool it down.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay, let's go.
Happy 50th episode. I almost said anniversary.
Oh my god, we've done 50 of these?
Mm-hmm. I almost said episode, but anniversary would mean like 50 years. Do you think we'll be doing
this in
50 years?
Maybe. Maybe we'll be doing like a hologram version of this.
Oh, dope. Yeah, and then we can like hopefully like use our younger, cuter selves.
Ooh, I like that. Like our younger avatars. Or you know what? We're just going to look the same in 50 years because black does not crack.
That's true, which is great, because I am feeling myself so hard right now. I feel like I've never looked better.
That is a good... I am so glad you're feeling that way, and you are feeling that way across the country from me right now.
We are separated at birth. We're like sister-sister. Or what's the one about the two twins and one of them is deaf?
Oh, I thought that's not the Parent Trap. I don't know, what?
There's a TV show on Fox Family or ABC Family or Family TV Zone. And there's like, the twins are separated at birth and one of them's like deaf.
Huh. That sounds very ABC Family or like Lifetime.
It's sort of like that because we can't see each other. So we're both blind.
It's true. I wasn't able to get my Skype to work.
No.
So we not only are we separated physically, we are separated visually as well. We're just listening to each other like how you guys listen to us.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's like there's a podcast in my ear. It's almost like we're half of Helen Keller.
Ooh.
Do you know there's a German word for basement? You know this fucked up thing? There's a German word for basement, and I'm going to call you out for this. My friend Rob, who was on the Homotacular Extravaganza Vakikis, Palm Springs edition. And he's studying German, and the German word for basement is something like Keller. And so he remembers Helen Keller locked in a basement.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. She's a brave woman. She did her thing. She wrote a play, and it turns out it was brilliant. So good for her.
Oh, my God. She was a genius. And
like, how did she... Helen Keller was blind and deaf, if you don't know... look on the Twitter. Helen Keller was blind. If I don't know, that's where people get information from today.
Okay.
Google, search Twitter results, Helen Keller. Check out her Twitter, thing, and it'll tell you all about her. She's blind and deaf, and she wrote, an amazing play.
Yeah, among other things. She was an activist.
How did she write a play and she couldn't hear or see anything?
You've never seen the movie or read her, biography? There's this woman...
I don't have time. Who's had the time?
She was this young girl, and a woman, I forget the name of the woman, but she basically, Helen Keller was going to be, in an institution for the rest of her life because of the olden days, and they didn't know what the fuck to do with people when they were like that. Mm-hmm. So this woman championed her and, taught her how to sign, taught her how to, enjoy life and all of that, and then she was a genius and brilliant and an activist and everything.
Wow, hot damn. Well, you go, girl. This is for you. She is the minority of the minority corner. So
she
I am into
is.
It. We are champions for you.
What would Helen Keller do?
What would she do? She's right up there with Gladys. So do you want to hear some highlights about Palm Springs?
Of course I do.
Okay, this shit was bananas. I've never been to Palm Springs before, and it all started with my group of gay friends. You go on an annual trip. Last year we went to Gay Days Disneyland. And this year we were we don't want to stand in any lines, but we love renting a house that had a pool and we loved going out afterwards. So
it's the best.
We went to the desert. Palm Springs is insane because it's just a bunch of houses and pools in a fucking desert.
You've never been to Palm Springs before?
No, which they I stole from the Native Americans. They technically own the land still and everyone's just renting it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
Palm Springs
I feel
is crazy.
It's insane. Well, and also the average age is 65 there. So we were going to feel young, hot shit. In fact, the first night we went out, we were pretty much the youngest guys in the first bar that we went to. And this guy comes up to me and he puts his hand onto, my hairy chest, and his hands are freezing cold. And he's like, "See how cold my hands are? Wanna warm them up?" As if, he's that close to death, and that was supposed to be, a turn-on.
Keep your cold ass, needing some ventilation hands off my baby J's chest.
It was pretty much a combination of MTV's Spring Break and any 90s music video and The Real World.
Nice.
It's about six
Pumps
of us.
In the butt.
Yes. They played that song. No, they didn't. But
they did?
No, I wish they did. They played a lot of other
damn
things.
Damn it.
So it started off subtly. It was about six of us. We rented out a house and a pool with a jacuzzi. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful house.
Nice.
We went out, the next night we went out in Palm Springs. Our Lyft drivers, every Lyft driver we had, they were all retired folks. It was kind of cute. It was Sophia was driving us around and Harold trying to figure out how to operate their mobile device. So that was adorable.
Oh, it's their golden years job.
Yeah. And I guess because the economy is kind of fucked up that they can't just live on their retirement. So they had to pick up some extra gigs, which is just
that's sad.
Driving around drunken party 20, 30 year olds.
I like that.
Yeah.
They
were
into
it.
Them.
In fact,
Sophia, supporting their economy.
Yeah. Well, Sophia, when we went, she dropped us off at the hotel where the pool party was at. She was like, "Ooh, this is a party hotel." She knew it was up.
Of course she does. She's from there. Oh, real quick. That I went to Palm Springs for a bachelorette, and we went to this one club called Zelda's, and there was a clown there making balloon animals. And then there was a girl fight in the middle of the club. So I know Palm Springs is cray.
Not surprised. I have a question, pop quiz, for you and your bachelorette party. Did you happen to go to any gay clubs or gay bars?
We did not.
Oh, thank God. I got a little scared. Because can I tell you this?
We did not.
Every gay club, gay bar we went to, there was not one, but at least two separate bachelorette parties that at least had a gaggle of 13 straight girls with them. And then they would I thought I was bad in San Francisco where it would happen just like once every so often. And then I was talking to one of the locals and he was like, yeah, this is every weekend. I'm like, oh my God. It goes back to what you said. You have to have like an accompaniment. Like you can't, 18 straight girls can't just go to a gay bar. Or a gay club.
I'm telling it. I know.
You have to be invited.
I don't like that.
And they just stand in the center of the dance floor and just go, woo, woo, and just stand there.
Mm-mm.
And then they like oogle our go-go dancers. And then, you know, he's trying to make money. So he's going to shake his thing in front of them. This ain't your Magic Mike, ladies. That rump is for us.
See, okay. This is me talking, listeners out there. This is Aneke. I am a straight woman. I'm going to tell all of you lovely women out there who want to just go and party, respect other people's spaces. I know it sucks to go to straight bars when dudes are like grinding on your ass and stuff, but that doesn't mean that you get to go to a gay bar and control it and act like you own it. That is not fair. That is you using your power. So come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stop it.
Yeah. So we went to this one club called Hunters, which we went there two nights.
Hunters.
And as soon as we walk in there, this like muscly, hunky promoter guy runs over to us and he like hands us these like, he gives us the skinny on this pool party happening for the next 2 days called Summer Tramp.
Summer Tramp.
Yes. I went to a pool party called Summer Tramp. It was a 2-day pool party in the center of this like hotel. It was insane. Folks traveled like all from all over the place to come to Summer Tramp weekend, and we just stumbled upon
it. Wow.
It was like,
this sounds bananas. Insane.
I couldn't believe it. And we get there, and it's like the pool is covered in pool toys, like inflatable pool toys. There's like this giant flamingo. Fun. And at first we're like, there's too many pool toys. Where are we going to swim? But halfway, once you're getting your party on, you're like, oh no, there is not enough pool toys up in here.
Nah.
And it was a great way to like flirt with someone, because then you just like are swimming around from pool toy and you just latch onto somebody's. And then you're just like, hey, and you just start talking. And next thing you know, like you're very close and maybe you're even kissing on that same inner tube.
Look at this.
I even ran into Mario Diaz, who he made my wet dreams come true. Mario Diaz is a LA local. Like he's been in a series of different commercials. He does some acting down in LA. He's a huge like legendary party promoter. He runs Big Fat Dick, which I have stories about
in
other podcasts. Remember I went to that party called Big Fat Dick and I took him some Big Fat Dick?
Oh yes. I think so.
Yeah. Well, it's in one of our earlier episodes, so totally got to make out.
These names.
Totally got to make out with him. And I realized I had this huge epiphany when I was out there dancing. Like, because sometimes I'd be, swimming, and then I'd be dancing. And I made two new New York friends who actually were on the same flight as me back to New York, which was insane.
That's so cute. I love that.
Right?
I love that. Yeah.
And dancing underneath the sun, I realized that the sun is our giant shiny disco ball. So just dance through life.
Ooh, look at you.
Always spinning. Mm. Just literally one of the most amazing experiences ever. And it turned into the real world when my friend Edgar, who out-partied me, decided, he was like, let's bring home these 8 drunken guys. And
8?
My friend Rob was too... Neither Rob or I could make any decisions about, is this a good idea or not? And our friend Derek and his boyfriend were at home sleeping, and we're just like, uh-oh, I guess we're going to bring the party home.
Snap. And this is not real world.
But
this
like, when you bring the party, Well, gay shore. We did, and then we never slept. Sunrose, a cute, adorable Marine/go-go dancer who maybe was a suitor of mine, he came over and he even scaled the wall.
Uh-huh.
He scaled because there was a compound wall of our house and I didn't answer the text, and he scaled the wall to come to the party, and it was like a scene out of like some Shakespeare play.
That seems a little intense.
Well, he sat there on the wall and I just saw him sitting there and he was like looking over at us, and I went over and talked to him, and I was down below and he was up on the top of the wall, and I was like, he was like, this is either really romantic or really creepy. And I said to him, I said, it's a little bit of both, but I'm into it.
Good. I'm glad you said that. I was going to say it's a little from column A and a little from column B.
Really, really awesome. It just was such a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I'm now addicted to pool parties. Every summer is now
I love it.
Complete with a pool party. Oh, another note at the pool party. yeah. some straight girl jumped into the middle of, like, us six or eight guys just dancing. And she jumped into the middle.
Oh, no.
And was just like, woo, yeah. She's like, look at all these boys.
But why?
I know. And it was, like, a very gay pool party with, you know, the straight girls came as well.
I just don't want you guys to be mad at, like, as a straight woman, it just bums me out.
I know it's not everyone, but I just want to point out, like, ladies, like, we've made this play several times, and
many times.
You need a guest, like, you need a guest accompaniment, and it can't be just, like, you know, you and your 16 lady friends and your one gay friend who's got the skinny on a, like, happening cool gay disco or gay party, like,
right.
You I think for every four ladies, there needs to be at least one gay man.
Or at least if you, like, let's say there's no, I don't know, you somehow end up in some magical land and you, like, want to go see, like, a show that, or not even magical land. Let's just say you and your straight ladies want to go see a show at a gay club. Don't act like you're the center of attention. That's, like, come on. Know your role.
Absolutely.
Be, like, on the peripheral. Like, don't just, like, think that you own everything. That is, like, it's, like, disgusting to me because it's so, like, not, it's inconsiderate.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, thank you for speaking out. I hate that we keep bringing it up, but I keep witnessing it happen. It keeps happening, so I can't keep having to discuss it.
It's just like cultural appropriation. It is cultural appropriation.
It's exactly cultural appropriation. And if you're confused on what that is, Aneke breaks it down in last week's episode.
Yeah.
Beautifully.
Just revisit that.
So revisit that if you're confused. Should I go to this place? She's got it breaking down right there.
Just listen to it. Just cue it up. And if you need to listen to it multiple times, we're there for you. Just keep repeating it.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Oh, I went to a wedding this weekend.
Okay. Yes. How was it? You're still drunk.
I still am. I'm a little sick. I got way too drunk.
Okay.
Like, Andrew told me that I was out on the dance floor trying to act like Donna Summers. I literally...
Was that you just twirling around?
Yes.
Because that's what I imagine, like, the Donna Summer dance is. It's just twirling around, hands up in the air,
literally,
paddle turning.
Arms waving in the air, twirling around.
Good for Andrew
around.
For knowing the correct dance reference of that's what you were doing for, like, hours. How did you not throw up?
I am so embarrassed. Because at one point, I made Andrew, like, grab my hands, and we made, like, a ring around the groom, and we, like, twirled circles around him, and the groom was like, I can't handle this, and,
this
like,
ran
away.
This is amazing. I think it's because this is your first wedding having not being the bride. So you're like, woohoo, I'm going to fucking let loose. I'm going to bring the party.
I went nuts. I was like, I'm a guest. And I kept screaming that all night long. I'm a guest. I'm a guest.
Oh, man. It's your return back to, like, the real world of weddings. So it just, you'll subtly, you know, get back to where you were before with a because you understand
down.
What they're going through. So you want to, like, you know, highlight that. You're also celebrating that, like, woo, I don't have to deal with any of this shit.
Exactly. That is exactly what happened to me. I, like, went overboard because I didn't have to worry about the caterer or, like, forks or, like, if a shuttle was running late
it's
or
almost
anything.
Like we both had spring breaks. I had, like, gay spring break
we
and
did.
You had wedding spring break.
And we both went nuts.
We did. This is the spring break edition of Minority Corner happening in October.
I love it. It's the best.
All right, shall we get into our corners?
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about these racist-ass cameras.
Hell yeah, I'm going to go over the history of the racist-ass cameras, why they're racist, and how it all started. So, get ready to... You're going to have a talking to your camera after this.
Ooh, it's about to be put in its place.
Looking at you, camera.
Let's go to the corners.
Oh, I forgot to tell you.
Yes.
That people would ask me you know, what's my story? And I'd be like, at the pool party. And I'd be like,
oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'd be like, I'm bi. Coastal. It was like first foray into really owning that I live in both San Francisco and New York. And I own that.
I love that. Good. Own it. Because this is your home too over here.
Oh, absolutely. And New York is my home as well. But.
Yes.
Talking about cameras,
mm-hmm.
why your camera is racist. So
yeah, tell me why my camera's racist.
Yeah, I'll tell you why everybody's camera is racist. And
not just mine.
So this not just yours. No, okay, it's not just you, Ineke.
Good, mine I was feeling too hurt.
Mine too has racist bias towards it as well.
Oh my.
So we were taking pictures and, you know, some of us in our crew are white and some are, you know, black and brown. So Edgar's Latino and I'm black, and we were taking a picture, and somehow it came up that one of my friends dropped the bomb on me. Edgar said, because Edgar was taking a sexy picture with his, you know, butt around the tree, or I guess he was just hugging a tree, but because it's Edgar, it just automatically turned sexy.
Ooh.
And Derek was standing there too, but the focus of the camera went to Derek, even though sexiest Edgar was still there.
Okay.
And Edgar mentioned, well, cameras all have a natural bias towards whiter skin tones. And
interesting.
I was like, what? So I did some research.
Okay, good. Tell me. Break it down.
All right. I want to explain to you how film works. So some of this might be some brand new information for some of you who don't have an idea how film photography works.
Okay.
So I was looking at Priceonomics. First, I'm going to chart the history of how film was first produced and how it still affects, even though we're in the digital age, how it still affects the way that your camera picks up tones. Original film, it's this thin plastic, you know, covered in layers of photosensitive chemicals.
Yes.
And when it's exposed to a very small amount of light, like the tiny amount that hits it when photographers press the camera buttons, it's a very subtle image visible to the naked eye, and it forms on the film.
Oh,
so
okay,
developing
yes.
the film makes the image visible. So as a negative, the parts that were exposed to the most light are the darkest, and this is inverted in the printing process.
Oh, got it.
So that was originally back in the day. And so then it went through many changes. So early photographs were made up of three parts. So there's black and white photographs. One were taken through a red lens, one were taken through green, and one were taken through a blue filter.
Yeah, like with the, when you are developing the film, it has to go in the different
yes.
baths.
Exactly. So that was how the process was all developed. And this process was fine-tuned and pioneered by, who do you think?
Kodak.
Yes. And what ethnic background do you think these folks were?
White people.
Yes. Specifically, white affluent men in the U.S. were the ones who really pioneered all of this technology. So
yeah, because they had the money and the access to it.
Exactly, and they wanted people to look at, see how pretty they were and see their travel pictures because they were the only ones traveling and taking funny pictures of them and their family, right?
Like, oh, man, yeah.
Poor folks who were, like, farmers, they were like, listen, I just
got
to get
this. They ain't got no time for that.
I got to get this corn ready to go. So
my children are hungry.
And I don't want to take pictures of my starving-ass children because nobody wants to see that.
That's sad, but all right, yes.
So who do you... So knowing that if, you know, white folks were the ones pioneering this technology, they're probably making their photos and cameras and setting all their tones to and for
white people.
Exactly. So this professor, Lorna Roth, she's a professor at Concordia.
Okay.
Sounds fancy. Never heard of it.
I've heard of it. It's like an online school.
Oh, okay. Well, she still sounds really smart because she says things like this.
Yeah.
She said that film chemistry, photo lab procedures, video screen color balancing practices, and digital cameras in general were originally developed with a global assumption of whiteness.
Mm.
So just to sort of reiterate what it is that you and I were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about this, so here's how it all went. So back in the day when you took your little photos and you needed to go to the film shop to get your film developed, it was very, very, very likely that these shots were calibrated against a Caucasian woman who her name was dubbed Shirley.
Oh, a specific
so
woman.
Your photos... Yeah, it's an actual woman.
Why
it was
her?
Called the Shirley... I don't know.
Okay.
Somehow Shirley was the litmus test for all photos. So
was
back
she
in
beautiful?
The day...
Like, what the hell?
She was this white woman. She was wearing a white dress.
Oh.
And she had black gloves on.
Oh.
And she had a pearl necklace, and she was surrounded by three pillows.
This is luxurious.
Of primary colors, so blue, like the primary colors, blue, red, and yellow. So
James, real quick.
Yes?
They kind of went a little ridiculous with this picture.
With the Shirley card?
Yes!
Her hair is brown. She also had, like, brown, auburn hair. So everything was about the Shirley card. She was the litmus test. So,
oh man,
it didn't. So if they would, like, if they're testing to see if, like, all the chemicals and everything was right, if Shirley's dress was yellow or if her peach skin wasn't peachy, if any of the pillows, if the pillows were messed up, they were like, uh-oh, we got to reset everything.
Oh snap!
So if you do not match those things in the Shirley card,
God damn it,
your pictures are probably gonna turned out pretty fucking fucked up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, you know, with a white body as the light meter and all other skin tones are becoming deviations from the norm.
Ooh, this is a good analogy for racism and sexism today. We're not mad at Shirley. We're mad at the systems that were set up.
Shirley, do your thing. Apparently your picture
was... To favor
was,
Shirley.
Yeah, and a picture, your picture was apparently hella cute. That's awesome. But it's now the decades of what that created around it, Shirley.
Yes.
So Kodak, who developed all of the system and technology, they distribute Shirley cards and unexposed negatives of Shirley cards to photo labs everywhere for quality control. So she was the litmus test, right?
Yes.
There's this one quote from Adam Broomberg. He held an exhibition in 2013 around the subject of race bias in early photography. And he said that if you expose film for a white kid, the black kid sitting next to him would be rendered invisible except for the whites of his eyes and teeth. Which,
God damn it.
And think about, like, you know, as you go on, like, so many pictures I've seen from, like, you know, my family, or if you look in, like, old photos, and kind of keep this in the back of your head. Maybe we can unpack this a little bit later, but, you know, jokes that get said about, like, oh, I can't see so-and-so except for their teeth.
Yeah. And, interesting. I'm now seeing the connection.
Right? And so, and the sort of shaming that sort of happens towards black folks and their inability to show up in pictures that were never designed for their skin tone.
Oh, wow. This is fascinating.
So Shirley wasn't only used in the labs. So photography studios, film production crews, they all started using the sort of Shirley cards and the Shirley test. And TV crews would often use what they called color girls, who often enough, who oddly enough were all white girls. And so they would use these color girls to discover, like, the balance of the camera. So they might have them hold up, like, a black or a white card to figure out the camera balance. But these girls were always white. So NBC used to use these, a lot of different production crews. So film photography has a lot to do with chemical composition. And for decades, color film in the U.S. was calibrated to highlight Caucasian skin tones. And there was this documentary producer, Jean-Luc Godard. He was a new wave filmmaker, and he was commissioned to make a film about Mozambique. And he reportedly refused to use the Kodak Chrome film, which was the most popular film color at the time, because he complained that the film was developed for primarily a white market, and he pretty much called it that film racist.
Good for him.
Okay, so Roth, who I was talking about earlier, who is the professor, she goes on to explain that film emulsions could have been designed initially with more sensitivity to the continuum of yellow, brown, and reddish skin tones. But
interesting
the design
how.
But here's the thing. What she's saying is that the design process would have had to have been motivated by a recognition of the need for an extended dynamic and range. Because no one had an interest in developing that sort of technology or even had the forethought. They didn't care to, right? They didn't see anything. Yeah. They didn't see a need to. That it's possible and it would have been possible, but no one cared to.
They just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. Why would they? Like, they were, you know, if your photos are turning out nice and fine, then you have no room. It's so interesting because it's sort of like, I mean, again, this is another example of white privilege, even looking at, you know, Band-Aids were designed for white folks to be able to match the color of their skin tone. And if it's, again, you're not, why would you have any interest in changing the status quo when you're not affected by it? It's like a perfect, like, grand metaphor or an example of white privilege.
It's an it is a 100% example of white privilege. It is like if you're not affected, then you don't care.
Right, absolutely. So there was a British film studies professor, Richard Dyer. He wrote this book in 1987 called White. And he said in his book, he said, in the history of photography and film, getting the right image meant getting the one which conformed to prevalent ideas of humanity. And this included ideas of whiteness, of what color, what range of hue white people wanted white people to be. So essentially, like, sort of just setting the tone of, like, you know, what the right image was. And so think about how this filters in, especially into photography and, like, modeling and trying to get that right or white look. So you show up, and so your skin tone's not showing up correctly, and that you're not getting the full contours or whatnot. But things did start to change. But there's one good example of this, before I get to that, that if you watch Sidney Poitier in the movie In the Heat of the Night,
he's
hella sweating throughout that entire movie. And there's one scene in particular when he's next to Rod Steiger. And it's not just because it was hot and then in the South, but it's also because what they started doing is just throwing a ton of light onto black folks. So they just have to
Gotta
light them up, right? So the idea is, I'm gonna light them up. Because again, the technology is not designed to capture black skin tones. So then the other option is, well, we'll just put a bunch of light on him. So,
It's
interesting, because I've been in film shoots and, like, I had to have a ton of light on me. And I sweat a lot, as it naturally is. So this technique was even adopted into, so everyone started using this technique of, like, all right, just put a bunch of light on black folks. That'll do it. And it was even adopted by the apartheid and the South African government. So the Polaroid cameras that were used for even for ID, for photograph IDs, there was a little boost button. And so since black skin absorbs 42% more light, the boost button would produce 42% more light.
So they're just burning us then?
Yes, exactly.
These damn lights.
So I think eventually, an American Polaroid employee discovered this in 1970 and successfully campaigned for the boycott of this. And in 1977, Polaroid withdrew from South Africa.
1970? It took 7 years? Jesus.
Well, he finally discovered it. Yeah, it took a good while. But, you know, I think they're still having the apartheid happening there, too. So this assistant professor of film at Howard University, Montre Azah, Missouri, said what he said was that he was instructed of the following in school. This is what they taught him in film school. So this is how now we understand that film's not designed for black folks. So now what do we do? Right. So this is
how do we fix it?
What's the solution? So this is what he was instructed. If you found yourself in the unfortunate situation of shooting on the dark continent...
Are you kidding me?
And if you're shooting dark-skinned people...
Are you kidding me?
Then you should rub Vaseline on their skin in order to reflect light.
Stop it.
So this is part of, like, the things that they're teaching them. You know, put Vaseline on them or put immense fucking ways of light. Again, no one's wanting to revisit the technology and how it's being
stupid.
Used.
This is...
And so here's the thing. So why did any of this change? So Earl Cage, former manager of Kodak Research Studios, said that the black community never brought it up as an issue, except when parents were complaining about school graduation photos and portraits. So they never were speaking out about it. But isn't that possibly because black folks didn't understand how... I mean, most people don't understand how film works.
Right. Most people are just kind of like, I take a picture, that's how I look.
Right. So I wouldn't necessarily think to go out and, like, contact, you know, or to have a protest. And you're just thinking, like, oh, damn, my pictures are turning out pretty shitty. Oh, that's weird. Oh, my white friend looks really good in it. Oh.
Not to mention, we have bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not, like, that's not the only thing.
I know.
So, Kodak finally did get pressure to change their technology.
Oh, good.
But it wasn't from black folks. It wasn't from the black community. It wasn't from anybody who said, hey, it wasn't from any allies saying, this is fucked up. The technology needs to be changed. It was from economic pressure. So a chocolate company was dissatisfied with film's ability to render the difference between chocolates of different darkness. Yes, I know. I can't make this up. And
They favored chocolate over black people.
So a chocolate company was, like, upset. They're like, oh, they can't tell the difference between our chocolates. And furniture manufacturers were upset because you couldn't tell the different stains and woods. And that's when Kodak decided to do something different in their technology.
This is killing me.
I know. Yeah. So, you know.
What year was this?
This was coming into the 80s. So, and I'll and get.
What?
Yes. So, but many black and brown folks probably just assume that, you know, again, it was reflected in art inadequacies, or photographers weren't able to, you know, we're not really thinking, we're not understanding the technology that it's probably the film, right?
Right.
So in 1986, after decades and decades of poorly balanced photos, Kodak released what we eventually know it as Kodak Gold.
Oh, yeah, I remember Kodak. That's Kodak Gold.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Kodak Gold was created to be able to, for black people to show up better in photos. Wasn't perfected. And that's why they had Bill Cosby hucking that Kodak film.
That's why they picked Bill Cosby as their spokesperson?
That's why they had Bill Cosby shucking and jiving to be their spokesperson. That's my theory. I don't know. But that's, you know, because he was always about, oh, get the Kodak Gold.
Yeah, he was. Bobs. This is crazy to me. The chocolate part is stupid crazy to me.
I know. So in the 1990s, things started to, the Shirley cards actually started to disappear because they started using them less because we're going into more digital photography and photo processing.
Yeah.
So how does this, how does it work out in the digital era?
Yeah.
So Sarita McFadden pointed out this. Today, the science of digital photography is very much based on the same principles of technologies that shape film photography.
No.
In low light, the sensors search for something that is lightly colored or light skinned before the shutter is released.
God damn it.
Focus it on a dark spot and the camera isn't active. It only knows how to calibrate itself against lightness to define the image. So the same technology that was built for these ancient ways of film is the same ways and same principles that they took into building all of our digital cameras as well.
Oh my God.
Right.
And nobody changed it. Nobody was,
I mean,
like
there are some. I'm not saying, like, I mean, I'm showing up in photos. It is, but the still the norm and basis was, and still is, they're setting, you know, balancing of photos against, you know, white folks' images. And
yeah.
There's still, like, some technology that's out there that you can press a button or you can adjust things here and there. But the basis is still the same old process. And
damn.
Someone had even said that, when Whoopi Goldberg had her talk show,
yeah,
they had two cameras, one balanced for the guests and one balanced for Whoopi Goldberg. So one was balanced for each person. And if you put the Whoopi Goldberg's camera on, like, the white guest, like, that guest, like, looked terrible, apparently.
This is ridiculous that in this day and age that, like, we're still, like, we'd rather, or people would rather just have a special camera or special lighting for black people instead of figuring out technology to make sure that we all look good on it.
They don't care. Daniel Patterson, though, he did the Spike Lee movie, The Sweet Blood of Jesus, and he actually decided that he did something. I guess he said that he changed the wattage of the bulb and used a dimmer when he was shooting. Like, he'd have scenes with, like, dramatically different skin tones of folks, right? And
yeah.
Shooting at nighttime. And his film turned out just fine, and he didn't have to use any film lights. He just used wattage of a bulb and a dimmer.
Oh.
And he was so surprised that it was able to work out. So you kind of have to have a photographer or a film director who's just is really willing, I guess, to, again, work and understand with the technology of a broken system, like working with a broken system because no one's really looking to fix it.
Yeah, why aren't people looking to fix it?
And, like, hopefully that there are film directors and teachers, like some of the ones I mentioned before, who are out there teaching, you know, folks in the correct way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So fast forwarding, just a few modern examples of how this is still actually happening.
Yeah.
So fast forwarding today, there was in 2010, one of the users, a user called her Nikon Coolplex camera racist because the camera sensor failed to recognize the particular contours of her face. And I guess a message popped up on the screen of her camera inquiring whether or not she had blinked, and she replied, and she posted this because she was so upset that this happened.
Yeah.
She took a picture, and it was like, oh, did someone blink? And she said, no, I'm just Asian. And
oh,
she posted
that.
That's
terrible.
So, to answer your question, yes, even today in low light, the sensors search for something that is lightly colored or lightly skinned before the shutter release. same thing is sort of going today. And Ava DuVernay critiqued the production team on Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, yeah.
For, I guess there's a character named Chalky White.
And yeah, he's really dark skinned. Michael K. Williams, I want to say his name is.
Oh, yeah, I know him. Mm-hmm. Not personally, but
no.
She. We're always doing stuff together. She said, she wrote, Ava was like not having it. And she was like, I do not appreciate the way that Chalky White is not lit properly. Mm. And that doesn't mean that he has to be overlit. It means that's a dark brother. And if he's in a frame with a lighter skinned person, you don't automatically light for the lighter skinned person and leave him in shadow.
Thank you.
And that's what happens a lot. I've been in films where it's like, I'm a little dark over there.
Yeah.
But they're just setting things towards, like, the lighter skin tones over there.
It's so true. I get it. And like, he was in that terrible When the Bow Breaks. He played the detective guy that was in it for 2 seconds.
Right. Yeah, that's right. He came in there and he was fucking shit up.
Right. And he was lit fine in that movie.
Right, because you had to, like, and I guess maybe that's the advantage. It's like an all-black film, so there someone is on there knowing how to, you
know,
light black folks. And this also just reminded me of back in 2015.
Yeah.
When, remember when the Google Photos app first came out and it was tagging black people as gorillas?
No! What? That's okay. Racist as hell!
So this
I
shit
can't
is
handle
still,
that!
So this is still happening even today.
What?
So Google Photos, the Google Photos had, like, this new app, and it was a huge, big reveal. They were so excited about it because it was going to automatically, like, tag people and just do all this, you know, algorithm, magic, voodoo, science shit.
Okay.
Well, what it started doing is it started tagging photos of black people as gorillas.
That's disgusting. And,
right. So, again, like, someone on your team was either writing that algorithm. Something is wrong there, right? Something is, maybe it wasn't, you weren't processing enough folks of black folks, enough photos of black folks.
The system is broken.
The system is absolutely broken. And also, Google has been doing, you know, they do a lot of weird shit. That, like, apparently,
yeah,
when there was a time in 2015 that if you were to type some racial slur into Google Maps, it would give you the address of the White House.
Stop it.
Yes.
James, and I can't handle that.
Yeah. And you brought up the, I'm going to give you them all, and then you can let me know how you're feeling. I know it's a lot. I'm throwing so much at you.
No,
and
but it's good.
But remember when you were Googling, like, black teenagers versus Googling white teenagers, the type of pictures that would come up?
Oh, yeah.
The huge difference. So if you look at Google, the 70% of their employees are men, 60% of the company's employees are white, and 31% are Asian.
Mm.
Combined African American and Latinos make up only 5% of the workforce. So
5%? Jesus.
Yes. So again, it goes back to so many things that we've had conversations in. So it goes back to the early days of film when it's just white people creating things. They're only thinking to create things for white
themselves.
Folks. So why diversity in the workplace is so incredibly important. So you're not getting yourself into $1 million fucking lawsuit of tagging black people's
as gorillas.
As gorillas. Yeah.
Okay. You know what?
So, ugh. That's the history of film, and that's why your camera is racist. And why this shit is still actually kind of happening today. So don't tease your friend when, you know, they're like, I've heard it so many times of, like, you know, maybe even someone who's, like, darker than me of, like, oh, we can only see, you know, so-and-so's teeth in their eyes.
Oh, like, I hate that shit.
That comment is rooted in racism.
Yes.
And your technology that you're using is also rooted in racism. You're using a machine that was not designed for people of darker skin tones.
It's so true. It's like, it reminds me, and this is just like a dumb, simple example, but it's so true. Photo booth pictures. Way back when, me and my friends used to love taking photo booth pictures, but I would always want to take a color photo booth. But even color and black and white, I would come out so dark. And one, there's nothing wrong with being dark, but you just want to be represented properly when you're in a film,
right?
You know?
Yes.
And so I would always get really frustrated, and I started to just dislike taking photo booth pictures. But thankfully, lately, the ones that have been, like, more digital, I feel like have been balanced a little bit better. So
interesting. Yeah, because, like, the cameras know how to pick up the different shades and, like, white skin tones, but not black. It just doesn't see it. It doesn't see us. And so we are therefore, like, even in technology, we are then invisible, even within our own tech, even within technology of photos. And just think about, like, again, how this, like, you know, we get represented in pictures and the media.
Right.
I mean, this all ties in together from what is beautiful and what is, and how they deem us sometimes as, like, you know, animalistic exactly. gorillas. Like, even so today, like, we're viewed as an animalistic gorilla, according Awful. To the Google app. Right?
Ugh,
so,
God.
Wanted to just, because it blew my mind when I heard it, and then I did all this research, and I just, the history of it is there. So, maybe we need to take a step back, and
yes.
it's funny, because it's just, it's related to everything that's involved in race, but we need to take back and look at our system,
yes,
or our technology, and recreate something new, because our systems are flawed and were designed for a
it's
specific
broken.
Group of people. And our technology is also broken and designed for a specific group of people. They're one and the same.
That's so true. James, this has been like so informative and so fucking interesting. Like, really, everybody, we cannot live in a post-racial world. No one can say that because our systems
right.
have been flawed from the very beginning and we're just now trying to correct them. So
absolutely.
This is like even something as innocuous as Kodak film. You wouldn't normally think, oh, yeah, there's racism built in there, but there is. And you
yeah.
just like broke it down completely. So I just want everybody to, next time you're taking a picture, don't put Vaseline on your black friend's face.
Don't
just,
do it.
Don't do it.
And don't try. Yeah. I guess you kind of just have to put more light on them, but don't overexpose them.
Right. Don't
and
burn them.
Look into some better technology because it's 2016 and this shit should not still be a thing.
Right. If you are like tech savvy and you like tinkering and figuring out photography and different ways that film can develop and what it's look, what, how cameras can work when they're looking for the subject of their of the picture, do it. Help us change
there.
The system.
Yeah. Change the system.
It's activism.
Absolutely. So, yeah, even so, sometimes people are like, what can I do to help? I think we all work in different fields and avenues where you
yes.
can help. Maybe you're not, you know, a go out in the streets and protest person or yell at your grandma because she's voting for Donald Trump, but maybe you're a tech savvy person. So consider
right.
like just what Aneke said. And also when you're developing new technologies, this is why it's important to have a diverse team and also think
so
outside
smart.
Of the group that you just represent.
Right. Think about
is
us
Gladys
as a whole.
Gonna let see, this is why Gladys needs to be the new litmus test. That's why I said it before. So
yeah, it's
our
so
black
true.
Lesbians in a wheelchair.
That.
See? That's why we need it. Not Shirley, but Gladys.
No, Shirley is fine on her couch with her multicolor pillows and her black gloves. Living that luxury life.
She's about that life. So all right.
Well thanks.
Shall we
James.
Shall we go on to your corner?
Let's do it.
All right.
All right. We are in my corner.
Yay, Aneke. Take me away to your corner.
To prison.
Oh, damn. I forgot where we're going. Oh, go. Get me out of here. Get me out of here, this prison industrial complex. I don't want it.
Okay. So, you ready for this? This was actually pretty surprising to me.
Okay.
So, just a little bit of facts before I dive into the actual story. So, the Bureau of Prison System is basically like the head honchos of all the prisons in America, right?
Right.
And they currently contract with private companies who operate federal private prisons.
Right.
We've all heard it. We've all, like, if you're watching Orange is the New Black, they're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very buzzy. And
I
so
think even Hillary Clinton said in the debate that she wants to end the privatization of prisons.
And that's exactly what we're here to talk about today.
Whoa.
So when you hear that buzzword privatization of prison, that just basically means a private company owns the prison and their regulations are looser, they're crazier, they pack them filled with people, they're just really shitty because they're all about making that money.
Right,
know?
Yeah. It's for profit, which that's so weird to think about as people in prisons, like, and for profit, and it's like producing crops, like,
yeah.
but their crops are people, so they need people in their prisons.
Exactly. So, okay. So the Bureau of the Prison System currently contracts with private companies who operate 13 facilities. So that was surprising to me because for some reason, the way that everybody's talking about it and the way that it's so buzzy, I thought it would be more.
Actually, that's what I thought it was going to be more, too. I thought you were saying 13, like, ooh, that's a lot. I thought it was going to be more. It's only 13?
Right?
Wow.
Just 13.
Okay.
And, So, okay. And then in the year of 2014, the Bureau of Prisons paid, and now this is a lot, $639 million to private companies.
Wait, how much?
$639 million.
Jeez, wow. Okay.
Right?
Yeah, that's a lot.
So we're spending a lot of money that we don't need to be spending on these private prisons, but there's only 13 facilities, and basically they only have about less than 22,000 inmates in them.
Hmm.
Which, though they were bigger, it's basically close to half of the amount it was when private prisons were in their peak, which was in 2013.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of nice that that reduction has already kind of started
to happen.
Yeah, they're going down.
So crazy how much money gets funded into them, and look at our school system.
Exactly, I love that. Let's fund some schools instead of some prisons. Okay,
absolutely.
So on August 18th, the Deputy Attorney General, Sally Yates, she released a memo that instructed officials to either decline to renew the private prison contracts when they expire or to substantially reduce the contracts themselves.
Hmm.
And she said in her memo that the goal is to reduce and ultimately end our use of privately operated prisons.
Right.
Yates continues, and she wrote, "They simply do not provide the same level of correctional services, programs, and resources, and they do not save substantially on costs, $639. And
right.
As noted in recent reports by the Department Office of Inspector General, they do not maintain the same level of safety and security." So
absolutely. I'm sure. And, like, even just, like, the you know, prison... Ideally, the idea about prison is for, you know, reformation and rehabilitation.
Right.
And I know, like, they get rid of a lot of programming in those private prisons because, well, for one, they have less of an incentive to have mm-hmm. people walk out of prison being better people, to
yes.
contributing members of society
yes.
because they want them back in the prison system so they can continue making money
exactly.
off of them.
Exactly. So that's why people are really kind of angry at the whole privatized prison system. But basically what I want to talk about, because what I found out, that it's only 13 facilities in the whole United States, and they're already decreasing. So a lot of this stuff is actually happening with federally run prisons too. So we need to kind of stop using, yes, great, let's end private prisons. But we should also be looking at the other 95% of prisons that are out there that are run by the federal system, which are just as shitty, you know?
Absolutely. That's what my thinking was, because I was like, I wanted to blame it on privatized prisons, but actually
right.
it sounds to me like even our own government-run prisons are also equally as bad and fucked up.
Exactly. And even worse, so, okay, the, like, remember how I said the Bureau of Prisons are the ones who are in charge of our prison systems?
Yes.
So we also have facilities that hold detained immigrants, and
yeah.
those are hella privately run.
Really?
About 62% of the beds that are under control of these detained immigrants facilities are privately run.
Interesting. Aneke, do you
yeah.
think that those... this is really interesting, because that would be a really big, interesting point. I
mm-hmm.
wonder if these people who run these type of companies are probably more in favor of someone like Donald Trump, because if you have stricter immigration laws,
yes.
again, putting more people into those beds equals
yes.
more money for them. And then
exactly.
having to build new facilities to contain even more people, and right?
Ding, 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 ding. I think you are right, because also they are not under the Bureau of Prisons. So this whole memo about changing and decreasing the policy for privatized prisons
yeah.
does not apply to these facilities that detain immigrants. That is controlled by the Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
So none of this is going to affect them at all. Their policy is not changing. They are building more private immigrant detainee facilities, and they are going to be complete, like 62% are privatized. It's ridiculous. Holy fuck.
I mean, I think immigration is a whole entire another fight and battle that's even happening in this country, and I feel like it's sort of quiet. I feel like the issue around racism has, I think LGBT rights were really big in the last, you know, decade, I would say.
Right.
And now, like you see on the debate stage right now, the racism came up to be a huge, big issue. And I think the next one to come up is issues around immigrations. And I feel like sometimes, I wonder, is it, I mean, I hear things. But I also wonder, because it's a hard thing to speak up about, too. If you are an immigrant, how actively loud can you be about something when there's a country that's out to get you, right?
So it's such there's not enough allies for the immigrant community, because if you are speaking out, people will find a way to deport you.
Absolutely. I was actually just thinking, this is a community that needs allies, because they can't speak out for themselves.
Exactly. And people are getting deported for, like, really, really, really low reasons, or detained in these privatized facilities for having marijuana
possession,
all of these just paperwork not being filled out correctly. It's just a bullshit broken system that I think is right now kind of getting pushed aside, because people are applauding this whole, oh yay, we might be ending privatized prisons, when really I think that we should be focusing more on these
immigration detainee facilities, which obviously probably are targeting, you know, brown and black folks, like
completely.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that they're not filled with Canadians.
Yeah, I mean, we let Canadians come over here all the time. Justin Bieber, that girl from tons of actors. Nathan Fillion, he's Canadian.
Hella actors are Canadian. Ryan Gosling.
The girl from Lost. Luckily, Drake is so damn cute. No one wants to deport him.
Just leave him here.
Drake is hella sexy. Can I just say, every day, my love for him grows more and
this
more.
This is random as hell. I had no idea that you liked Drake so much.
I didn't know either, but he just sort of, like, kept creeping up on me. And I have a boner for him and a heartthrob for him. So I have both. Like,
that's confusing, but sweet. What about his music? Do you like his music?
Yeah, I started getting into it more. I think what happened was I saw a picture of him, like, working out, and I was like, and then I listened to a song and I was like, oh, okay, this is okay. And I like his stuff with Rihanna, and but now I hear him and I see him in my mind, and I'm into it.
All right, well, good for you. Well, we won't detain Drake in our privatized facilities.
You do it. But maybe that's what it'll take, because if you detain Drake, everyone will hit the streets.
Oh, for sure. Or Rihanna.
Detain, I'm not calling for this, but
yeah, we don't actually want this to happen, but
if they do, it will be a huge call to arms, because people will be like, oh hell no.
Exactly. Also, I kind of want to point out the thing that's, like, kind of been weird to me is how much of a story privatized prisons have become. Like, literally, in the new season of Orange is the New Black, it's all about how the prison became privatized.
Right.
And I don't know, like, I don't want to be, like, conspiracy theorist lady or whatever, but if it's gone down significantly in half since 2013, and it just makes sense that, yeah, now's the time that would make it easier for them to get rid of it, because it's already, like, lost half of its legs, you know?
Right. And I wonder if some of these companies, I wouldn't be surprised if these companies, these same privatized companies in prisons are also the same privatized companies in the immigration facilities.
Oh, you know they are. They have to be.
And they're putting their money into this other thing, and this law is not going to focus and concentrate on them. I do think this is a step in the right direction,
completely.
I do think then the next focus is we actually need to restructure our own prison system.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm on the Angela Davis camp. She calls for the abolishment of prison systems, that there are other options that other countries do use. I highly recommend the book. It's a short read. It's like 100 pages. Everybody,
I'm gonna look it up.
The book, Angela Davis's Are Prisons Obsolete? And spoiler alert,
this sounds good.
The answer is yes. And she's got to break it down to you. And it's a short read. It's 100 pages. I know a lot of us think, oh, this is such a crazy idea. But there are – it's just because that's all we know. But doesn't mean that's the only option out there. It's just because we're only looking in one direction. There are other options and solutions and ideas that are more helpful and useful. Because right now, the system that we have, it just doesn't work. It targets primarily Black and brown folks. It does not build them to actually go back out into society. Like, folks who are in prison should be learning, like, computer engineering and shit. And they should come
you
out.
You think, or something, learn a skill so when you come out, you have a job ready for you.
Something, because they're not having any skills being able to go back out into the world because they don't want them back out in the world. They want them in the prisons because also, well,
making money,
cheap labor, even from non-prison facilities. So there's a lot. There's a lot of companies that actually, they are making a lot of their money off of the prison complex, not just the for-profit, the ones, our federal ones too. So
remember Michael Jordan and the Air Jordans? They're being made in prisons. It's all cheap labor.
Parts of Verizon phones, like the list goes on of things that are built in prisons. Strawberries that get picked, like all kinds of shit.
We need 10 cents a day.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. And so basically one couple of steps here from what we've just been talking about. One, great, abolish privatized prisons. We're already halfway there. Let's complete it. Let's finish that out. Two, we need to take a step and look at our own prison system, our federal prison system that's run by the government. What is going on? We need to figure it out, fix it, change it, abolish it, whatever we need to do to make it work. And then three, we need to look into these privatized immigration detainees that are our systems that are being funded or that are under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland. What are you doing, Department of Homeland? Yeah. Are you really protecting us or are you making money?
Absolutely. I think we need to, thank you for bringing this up because it was definitely not on my radar and just reminding me too. I think we need to bring the conversations around immigration up more loudly. Like the only person I know really talking about immigration is like Eva Longoria. That's it.
Yeah. Well, at least she's doing it.
Yeah, she's using her and America Ferrera. That's it. Like there's no other celebrities. And again, like where are the other allied celebrities as well stepping up to the plate?
Exactly. And just like what you were talking about with the Kodak film, we need to start like bringing in diverse voices. This is why allyship and diversity is important because it's bringing everybody to the table to think of interesting outside the box ideas that are inclusive to everybody.
Hear, hear. Yeah. And that guy, this was beautiful.
Like, oh, good.
You gave me some, like, I don't know, Diane Sawyer tingly, hard hitting, you know. I was trying to think of, like, you know, like a black female, like, journalist. But Gail King?
Oprah? Oh. Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry.
Yes, I like how you do Gail before Oprah.
Sorry.
Gail will like that, but Oprah's coming after you. Quizlet Corner, ooh. Quizlet Corner, ha. Quizlet
work
Corner.
Work it out.
I'm ready.
Whose jizz is this?
Ooh. What?
That was some. What? That was one of the themes of my Palm Springs vacation. Whose jizz is this?
Gross.
No, because it's from This Is What You Came For.
Oh. Okay.
Both of them were songs. Whose jizz is this is by Peaches. It's not like there was just jizz all over the place, and we're like, whose jizz is this? Although.
Stop it.
Maybe.
Save that for your private memories. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to cut that. No. But sometimes there would be, like, you know, 10 of us in the hot tub and something weird would happen or something silly or absolute, like, scandalous.
Yes.
And we just go into, this is what you came here for. Or what's that Rihanna song? This is what you came for.
Yeah, that's like her and Calvin Harris.
Yeah, I guess written by Basic Swift.
Yeah.
And that song, like, literally that song was the song. That's my song of the summer because that song played, like, four times a night when we're out in Palm Springs.
Or do you mean song of the fall?
Or the song of the week? Well, my summer really kicked off in like late July.
This is true.
And just ended last weekend. Yeah. So.
Okay, quiz. You know. I'm ready.
Okay, quiz a corner. Basic old school rules here. We're going old school with it. One of these is not true.
Okay, I can handle that.
Off. You're going to figure it out. I know what the game is.
No.
You know what the game is. Old school rules.
We are here we good go. To go. Yes.
All right. Britney Spears said that she likes her 30s way more than her 20s.
That's true.
What? Okay. Well, you don't know.
Am I waiting till the end? Oh, I'm waiting. Oh, yes. Sorry. Oh, sorry. I forgot.
Okay. All right. Could be true or could not be true. We don't know.
Okay.
NBC's new show, Mail Order, was not canceled, even though it appears to be glorifying racial stereotypes and trafficking.
Ugh, I've heard about this terrible show.
Could be true, could not be true. Mm-hmm. Solange has a new album and everyone is loving it so mm-hmm. much. Could be true, could not be true.
Mm.
Shonda Rhimes tweeted, "If I hear one more dumbass say we must be protected from transgender peeps using a bathroom, let's protect transgender peeps from dumbasses."
Go, Shonda.
All right. Which one of those is not true?
Okay, so the one that is not true is the Mail Order Bride show was canceled.
Correct. Yes. Shonda Rhimes did tweet that. Solange does have a new album. I haven't listened to it yet, but it's called A Seat at the Table.
Yes.
And it's been described as a stately, sprawling celebration of Black identity that displays an artful, kneeing, mm-hmm. single-mindedness.
I've listened to two of her tracks.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty good.
I heard that it's...
One of them is called Don't Touch My Hair, which, of course, I love.
Love.
I love that. She is more of a... I like Solange. I do. I really liked her last album a lot. She uses the producer Blood Orange, Dev Hynes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's really into that, like, 90s R&B kind of soul, which is good.
Right.
I think I'm going to have to listen to her two tracks again and listen to the whole album as a whole because
yes.
I like her message. I like a funkier beat, and this is more of a slow burner. But I highly recommend it. I'm going to listen to it multiple times. I'm going to buy it because I support little baby Solange.
And, you should. Everybody, she needs the money too.
And you know what? I love anything that is unapologetically Black, and she is doing it up. So
absolutely. Can I also add a few albums onto your to-listen-to list?
Yes.
Again?
Okay, here we go.
Janet Jackson's Unbreakable.
Yes, stop it.
That's about a year. Came out a year ago. And Britney Spears' Glory. Those are your three new albums. I would love for you to listen and all of our listeners.
Okay. All right. We will have a listener party.
And Britney did honestly say, and I think you'll appreciate this quote. Mm-hmm. She said, "My 20s were horrible and my teens, they were fun. But I like 30s. 30s is great. You know who you really are."
It's so true. And also, nobody had a more traumatic 20s than Britney Spears.
Yeah, you look at her 20s, like, she, because remember, like, what was it? She's about 20 years old when Slave for You came out, and then she, you know, did Toxic about, like, a year after.
Right.
And then it was her 20s. And it was bad.
It was a hot-ass mess. She shaved her head. She was beating cars with umbrellas. She was, like,
Circus
having breakdowns.
Circus came out when she was 29, and so then you started, oof, you know, Femme Fatale and the other ones after that, and she's hitting on point. And I just turned into my 30s, and I'm loving it. It's great.
It's good, isn't it? Being in your 30s is nice. It's very much like you're not as worried about who, like, what people think. And
absolutely.
Like,
and you start accepting more so of who you really are and what it is that you like.
Yes.
And just accepting, you know, comparing yourself to, like, others and thinking that you have to be anything else other than what you are and who you are in this given exact time.
Exactly. I love it. I am looking at my mid-30s coming up in a few months, and I'm ready.
All right. Yeah, you are. She's ready for it. Bring it.
Yes.
So, ready for more drunken weddings.
Yes.
And she's like, bring it on.
I want it.
NBC's Mail Order, I gotta give my hat off to NBC on this one. NBC's Mail Order was canceled because it looked like it was appearing to glorify racial stereotypes and trafficking. So change.org had a petition and it shut it down.
Good.
That was the main reason. And it was written by Superstore's Jackie Clark. I guess she has the show called Superstore. I've heard, I guess, some buzz about it.
Yeah, America Ferrera's in it.
Oh, then I'm into it. I gotta tune in. I love me my America Ferrera.
Yeah.
She is my America sweetheart.
No.
So, but based on, but the show is based on Jackie Clark's own childhood experiences with her family, and it would have followed a mail order bride from the Philippines who arrives in America to help a recently widowed man raise his two daughters.
It's just awkward.
I see where it was coming from, and I see, but there's a lot of opportunity for misstep in like a half hour sitcom.
Right.
And how many, you know, fish out of water type jokes it could have been really heartwarming, and it could have also, I think we're not ready for this.
It's to be told
in a right way.
Ugh. And I don't know. The fact that it got all the way up to the highest levels until a change.org petition happened, this is another reason why we need more voices at the table, more diversity.
Just like Solange says, a seat at the table. And because someone could have red flagged this way beforehand.
Yes.
I mean, there's a reason why this, and that's why, like, I also just want to say the power of voting, right?
Yes.
I know this seems like a silly thing, but, you know, when we go out and we do speak our minds, even on, you know, social media, that, like, you know, hashtag Oscars so white, like, mm-hmm. it pushed Ava DuVernay to a household name, and she's doing amazing great things. Not that
yes.
she made, it helped get her the recognition that she deserved. And so getting out there and voting and being active, like, look what just happened. We shut a show down.
It's so true. Oh, man, we did
now
it.
If we can use our same powers to bring happy endings back.
Did you hear? I just read this, actually.
What?
The
what?
Writers for Happy Endings, this is a TV show, if you guys didn't know, that was on
It's like a funny version of Friends. It's a funny version of Friends.
They are writing a lost episode, which they're going to get the cast to get together with
yes.
and do a reading for.
Oh, man, that sounds amazing.
Right?
The show is so good. They, you know, a group of six friends, they had Damon Wayans Jr., Adam Pally, who played this gay guy who was just, you know,
Max.
Not your typical what you normally see on TV. He was like, you know, a slobby bear guy.
Yeah.
And what I loved is that, like, even like there was an interracial relationship, and the lead guy who would have been like, he's just the straight white guy. He was sort of like the loser of the group. Like, he was the butt of all the jokes of everybody.
Oh.
And I just thought it was a nice flip of the script. Like, he wasn't the real leader, even though we kind of thought that
he was. Like, the ultimate ensemble cast.
And they're always so hilarious. So,
oh,
Happy
so
Endings.
Good.
If you can find it on Netflix or your Hulu or your whatever you watch things on, recommend it.
Yes. And there are some really awesome TV things that are out there right now, too. Like, I hear Luke Cage. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but
I haven't watched it yet either. I'm going to try to do it this weekend.
Yes.
I hear it's great.
I hear, like, they have him in a hoodie, a black man in a hoodie being not affected
Ooh.
By bullets. That is.
Oh, I can't.
Amazing.
Wow, this is awesome.
Amazing.
Oh, and I heard that. I haven't watched it yet, but because I'm trying to just binge watch all of my shows, so I have to wait till they're completed.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard that, like, How to Get Away with Murder had an amazing episode that was, like, an amazing moment for black women on television.
Huh. I've watched the last two episodes.
Oh. Well, some article was, like, raving about it, so
I don't know. I feel like that show is always, like, an amazing moment for black women.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. I'll give it to you. Well,
good. Hey, it's
you
good.
Won Quiz at Corner.
Thank you, James. I did it. I finally am back. I'm back. I'm back.
She's back on track, and it's not whack. She's got it like that.
I did.
I love forget-me-nots.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Jordan.
And we've been doing Jordan Jesse Go for almost 10 years now.
And it's not gotten any easier to describe.
So we asked our fans to do it for us.
Jordan Jesse Go is a weekly conversation with
two best pals,
two hilarious friends,
the hilarious smart kids,
talking about hilarious stuff that happens to them,
mostly really stupid stuff,
awkward anecdotes, insane tangents, heartfelt stuff.
It's like being thrown in the middle of a hilarious conversation between you and your best pal.
It's a show that makes me laugh every week, which is pretty rare and wonderful.
It might be the best thing on the internet.
One of the funniest things you will hear.
And it's the best part of my week and has kept me company for the past 7 years through all sorts of life. I love those guys.
That's Jordan Jesse Go, the comedy podcast that's been named Best of iTunes.
Every Monday on MaximumFun.org or your favorite podcasting software.
I'll hug you and kiss you and love you.
Love you.
Love you.
Love you.
You!
Aneke, happy
yes.
50th episode, first and foremost.
James, for our 50th episode, we did a really good job.
I feel solid. Like, I feel like we really, you know, threw down the education gauntlet. We had some laughs. We had some sexy story times.
Yes. God, James, I can't believe we've done 50 episodes.
And we managed to do it when we're across the globe, when we're in front of each other. Like, distance does not keep us apart.
No, we persevere.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, well, thank you all especially for those of you who've listened to all 50 episodes. We want to know if you've listened to all 50 episodes. So you can, you know, tweet at us or Facebook message to us or something. We want to know who are our 50 episode gold star listeners, and we'll do a little special something for you. We don't know what it is because I just made that up, but we want to know if you listened to every 50 episodes, all of them. We want to know who you are, and we're gonna do a little special something for you.
Wow, I didn't know we're doing something. Okay, yes,
I didn't know either. Just hit me. I said it, so we have to.
It may be a saying your name. It may be a gift. It may be a song.
Who knows?
Maybe. I might draw you a picture.
Ooh, yeah. We got something for you. So let us know.
Maybe a button.
How can they get a button?
I don't know.
Oh, God.
I could cut some buttons off of shirts.
Okay.
Send them to people.
Oh, wait. Just buttons? I thought you were going to make a button. Like, you're just going to take...
No.
You're going to just take a button
just
off
Just a button.
Of, we will mail you just a button from a shirt. I love it. Because at first I was like, I like that idea. Because I was like, I don't want to make buttons. Like, I love you guys. I don't want to make no buttons. I am not into it. But I will totally take the buttons off of some shirt and send it to you.
Because we're quirky.
And lazy.
Yes, quirky and lazy. That's our new tagline.
You know what it is? Button just isn't our thing. Like, it's... I mean, I love the song.
I like buttons.
I love the song by Pussycat Dolls, but I don't want to make buttons.
Listen. Yeah, I don't necessarily want to make a button. If somebody could
make
a button for us,
I'd be... send you some buttons, babe. Wait, what?
If somebody made a button for us...
Oh, yeah, if there's a volunteer, and then that volunteer will then send the list of 50. Wow, Minority Corner kids. It takes a village. Minority Corner,
it does.
It takes a village.
So, okay, tweet at us at Minority Corner with a K. Facebook, Minority Corner with a K. We've noticed an uptick, so, like, welcome all you new listeners.
Yes, welcome to the party. We're loving having you. And also, feel free to email us if there's any stories that we should, if we're not paying attention to. Please let us know through the Facebook, through the Twitter, through Gmail. Let us know what we should also be talking about. And
Our email is minoritycornerwithak@gmail.com. You 50 episode listeners, let us know
who you are. Loud and proud.
And we're gonna be in Chicago.
Yes.
In November
18th.
18th at 7 p.m. at the Steppenwolf Theater for the Chicago Podcast Festival. You can buy tickets online. Look up Chicago Podcast Festival.
And we'll be there, and you can come meet us, and we'll be in Chicago for the weekend. So we'd love to have you out there. Yeah.
Excited.
Yay. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait to physically see you back in November. We're going to tear up Chicago.
Oh my God. We're going to throw it down.
Down. And okay, I miss you, oodles and oodles.
I miss you so much too, James, but I'm so glad we get to connect every week like this.
Absolutely. And we miss all you listeners too every week when we don't, you know, yeah.
Yeah. With our one-sided relationship with you guys.
It's very one-sided. No. So that's why I get involved in the conversation. All right. I will see you all next week. Don't forget to watch the debates will already have happened. But I'll have something to say about it.
Yeah. We'll be breaking it down. Maybe. Who knows?
Or we might not watch it. Might get ice cream instead. But don't forget to vote.
Yes. Don't register to vote. Now is the time to do that.
Absolutely. All right. See you next week.
Bye.
The great questions of your life.
The great questions of your life.
Should you put ketchup on a hot dog?
Put ketchup on a hot dog.
Toilet paper over or under?
Toilet paper.
Star Wars, Star Trek?
Or Star Trek.
Fear not, my friends.
Fear not,
Mark
my
and
friends.
Hal always reach the definitive answer. Simply listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Pacific on Maximum Fun. We got this. Your better self is right around the corner. Namaste.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.